It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are, off and running live on this 19th day of November 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And that, of course, is also where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, madcap, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Yep, just run over to HeadOn.live, click on chat room. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password if you don't have one already. Jump right in and do just like I'm doing, as a matter of fact. And you will be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Squeaky, early arrivers who get here for the beginning of the program almost religiously, except we don't do anything religiously around here. And Sparky will be along here in a little bit. He had a doc appointment. And speaking of which, I have a little program note. Now, this isn't as to me. Bossman Wayne is having an angiogram tomorrow. So I know the entire Horn Family Community Congregation will be sending their best thoughts along the way. And what it boils down to is I'm going to go over and take Bossman Wayne for his angiogram, because, you know, after the angiogram, there's a whole lot of don't just do something, lay there, and I'll take him to and then bring him from if they don't keep him overnight. If they put in a stent or two, then they probably will keep him overnight. But I don't anticipate anything, any interruption to the program, but it is at least a possibility, so I wanted you to be aware of that. And that's tomorrow, the 20th of November, 2019. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Here it is, Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, and every program here begins with gratitude, and so thanks go out today to Sharon. Thank you, Sharon. Thank you to Dave from the Blind in Talibandiana. And thank you to Mike in Cascadia. Those are our subscribers for the 19th day of the month. Thank you so very much indeed for being partial sponsors of the program. That's critically important for the continued existence of this little non-capitalist, independent, progressive broadcast operation, this little experiment in doing things the way nobody else really does them. Yeah. So thank you. And that our fundraising goal, as we move toward what I hope will be fundraising-free radio for the final week of November, well, our fundraising goal this evening is at $580. And thanks to everybody yesterday who responded in such a way to keep it from being like $780. We're at 580 to go. If we raised $580 tonight, we would be even going into prayer meeting Wednesday. If you want to help out, well, I trust you know where the means of doing that is. It's over at headon.live, and it's under the tab called Contribute. And if you would like to be a subscriber to the program, and if you would like to part with, on a daily basis, something less than half of the cost of a McDonald's hamburger, to keep this going, then just go to Contribute at headon.live and put 10.00, $10, in the field there, and check that little box that says make this a recurring, you know, or make this happen every month, whatever it is it says there, and you'll be part of the Merry Subscriber Band. And gosh, it would be wonderful someday to have to run this thing entirely on subscribers so that I don't have to do what I'm doing now. But there it is, $580 to get even with the 19th day of the month in this November 2019, where we stand. Now, there's a challenge. Ralphs says, I'll kick in 30 if other people kick in 30. So Ralphs has a $30 challenge on the table. It's the 30 for 30 challenge, courtesy of Ralphs up in Milwaukee. And that would go a long way. That would take us down to 520, and then we could work on getting back down to 420. Okay? So thank you, Ralphs. Thank you very, very kindly. That's wonderful. Where to begin? It's kind of hard not to begin with the hearings today. Of course, it was, as every one of these hearings is, an exercise in mockery and an exercise in, just disdain for the Constitution coming from the godforsaken maggots. There is no one. Well, let's put it this way. The committee, as it is presently constituted, contains the very worst elements of the brown-nosing, Trump-felching, maggot contingent in the House. I've gotten to the point where I can barely stand the sight of Devin Nunes. To think that that man, a little less than a year ago, was the chairman of that committee. Oh, my Jesus. One wonders how much he knows and how much he has let slide. The man has no dignity and has no regard whatsoever for the Constitution of the United States. With his opening statements in both before in the morning and after lunch, I just want to welcome you to this act of the circus. Because to him, trying to root out corruption and pursue evidence of impeachable conduct, well, it's all just terribly, terribly funny to Devin Nunes, the man who sues parody cow accounts. You can't make this stuff up. But then there's Elise Stefanik, and there's Jim Shorts Jordan, and what's his name? is he a Jim or a John? Ratcliffe from Texas Stan. And today, of course, Lieutenant Colonel Alex Vindman gave his testimony. He showed up in his Army dress blues, complete with his combat infantry badge and his Purple Heart. And in his opening statement, he addressed himself to his father. Now, I don't know if Lieutenant Colonel Vindman's father is in the great beyond or if he is still with us here on planet Earth. But he told him, "Don't worry, Dad, I'm going to be okay. I'm doing the right thing." And regardless, Nitwit Nero had smeared him. And Nitwit Nero's little lick spittles and suck-ups and bootlicks and brown-nosers actually questioned the man's patriotism. Because that's who they are. And at one point in time, Devin Nunez forgot who he was talking to. Referring referring to Lieutenant Colonel Vindman as Mr. Vindman. And straightened him out in a straight-up hurry. It's Lieutenant Colonel Vindman. It reminded me of that line from one of the Austin Powers movies where Dr. Evil says, "I didn't spend 6 years in evil medical school to be called Mr." But Devin Nunez got his ass handed to him. Devin Nunez, who, well, has no honor whatsoever. Meanwhile, Jennifer Williams, who testified alongside Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, she's a career State Department employee. Well, she got singled out by Nitwit Nero. Whatever it was that sent him to the hospital on Saturday didn't keep him from tweeting.
Ms. Williams, on Sunday, the president personally targeted you in a tweet. This is after he targeted Ambassador Yovanovitch during her hearing testimony. I'd like to show and read you the tweet. It reads, "Tell Jennifer Williams, whoever that is, to read both transcripts of the presidential calls and see the just-released statement from Ukraine. Then she should meet with the other never-Trumpers, who I don't know and mostly never even heard of, and work out a better presidential attack." Ms. Williams, are you engaged in a presidential attack?
No, sir.
Ms. Williams, are you a never-Trumper?
I'm not sure I know an official definition of a never-Trumper.
Would you describe yourself that way?
I would not, no.
Did that tweet make an impression on you when you read it?
It certainly surprised me. I was not expecting to be called out by name.
It surprised me, too, and it looks an awful lot like witness intimidation and tampering and in an effort to try to get you to perhaps shape your testimony today.
Yep. You know, Nitwit Nero can't help himself. God bless him. You know, that's how we talk in the South. God love him. He can't help it. Yeah. And attacking attacking a Purple Heart winning active duty commissioned officer in the United States military who also happens to be an immigrant, well, it's not a good look. I mean, I don't remember, please, what Hillary Clinton said, describing the people who supported or support Chlamydia Claudius. She said about half of them I would put in the basket of deplorables. Awkward language, strange language. But the maggots began hooting and hopping and jumping up and down and squealing and pooping in their hands and flinging it at the walls, you know, because that's what maggots do. She called those deplorables. I'm going to own the libs by going right out and getting me a deplorable T-shirt. And I hope the feller at the T-shirt shop can spell it, because I sure can't. But I'm going to, because I'm a deplorable. And they embraced it, you know, with the help of the propagandists in the maggot organization. She said half were deplorable. You know, the half that are Nazis and skinheads and white supremacists and white nationalists and Klansmen and, you know, deplorable people. But the maggots embraced it wholeheartedly. And lo and behold, well, they are deplorable. They are worthy of being deplored. And so, with given Lieutenant Colonel Vindman's immigrant status, when he was questioned by Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy, this happened.
Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, I'm concerned that your loyalty has been questioned, not just because you're bringing forward evidence of wrongdoing against the President of the United States, but because you're an immigrant. Recently, Fox News host Brian Kilmeade said he, meaning you, were born in the Soviet Union, emigrated with his family young. He tends to feel simpatico with the Ukraine. I find this statement reprehensible because it appears that your immigrant heritage is being used against you. Lieutenant Colonel, I came to this country.
Time out. What Representative Krishnamoorthy says is touching and deeply meaningful. But Congressman, if you get a chance to do it again, instead of describing the conduct as reprehensible, it might help the people of the United States a whole lot, because through the course of this process, we've been talking about the importance of using language that the American people can understand. If he had in that moment, instead of describing the conduct as reprehensible, it is reprehensible conduct, but if he had instead called it deplorable, it would have been a shot heard round the world. Don't you think?
Being used against you. Lieutenant Colonel, I came to this country when I was 3 months old. Your family fled the Soviet Union and moved to America when you were just 3.5 years old, right?
Correct.
And I understand that your father worked multiple jobs while also learning English, right?
Correct.
Your father stressed the importance of embracing what it means to be an American, correct?
That is correct.
All your childhood memories relate to being an American, correct?
That is correct.
You and your family faced difficult times during your childhood, correct?
Yes.
I can relate. That's my story, too. But your father went on to become an engineer, right?
He reestablished himself in his former profession in the United States.
I can relate. I got a BS in engineering. Of course, some people claim I practice the BS part now. Your father never gave up working hard to build his very own American dream, did he?
He did not.
Well, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, your father achieved the American dream, and so did you and your family. From one immigrant American to another immigrant American, I want to say to you that you and your family represent the very best of America.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's what Republicans do. They smear people for being immigrants. Even though, and granted, it is one of the great failings of the immigration system of the United States, even though the wife of the Senate Majority Leader is a member of Trump's cabinet and is herself an immigrant. I mentioned earlier Devin Nunes getting burnt, and I mean to a cinder. This was powerful.
Mr. Vindman, you testified in your deposition that you did not know the whistleblower.
Ranking member, it's Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, please.
Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, you testified in the deposition that you did not know who the whistleblower was or is.
I do not know who the whistleblower is. That is.
Well, how is it possible?
Because that's the other thing that Moo Devin went after this morning. They're still thumping away on that hollow drum that is the great search for the whistleblower, because, you know, they don't have any law to pound on. They don't have any facts to pound on. They don't even have much in the way of a table to pound on. So they'll thump the tin drum of the whistleblower, even though the whistleblower is utterly irrelevant now, because the whistleblower blew the whistle on conduct that transpired on a phone call that, well, the Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, not Mr. Vindman, but Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, actually heard. And which Jennifer Williams actually heard. In a way, you know, it's not quite like, say, the Washington Generals, the phony basketball team that always squared off against the Harlem Globetrotters. You kind of felt bad for them because you knew they were there to lose. Now, their check cashed just the same, but they were there to lose. They were there to be beaten by the Harlem Globetrotters. But it's not like they were without talent. It takes talent to make sure that you play poorly enough to lose every game. There's just not a hell of a lot of talent on the maggot side of the court these days. There are no great statesmen. There are no great orators. Instead, what they have is Devin Nunes and that Ratcliffe guy and Jim Shorts Jordan and Elise Stefanik. Oh, but speaking of Jim Shorts Jordan, he got reduced to ash as well.
Your boss had concerns about your judgment. Your former boss, Dr. Hill, had concerns about your judgment. Your colleagues had concerns about your judgment. And your colleagues felt that there were times when you leaked information. Any idea why they have those impressions, Colonel Vindman?
Yes, Representative Jordan. I guess I'll start by reading Dr. Hill's own words, as she attested to in my last evaluation that was dated middle of July, right before she left. Alex is a top 1% military officer and the best Army officer I've worked with in my 15 years of government service. He is brilliant, unflappable, and exercises excellent judgment. So it was exemplary during numerous visits, so forth and so on, but I think you get the idea. Mr. Jordan, I would say that I can't say what why Mr. Morrison questioned my judgment. We had only recently started working together. He wasn't there very long, and we were just trying to figure out our relationship. Maybe it was a different culture, military culture versus...
And, Colonel, you never leaked information?
I never did, never would. That is preposterous that I would do that.
Damn. I mean, that's the testimonial equivalent of pulling the back of Jim Shorts Jordan's underwear back up over his head and then, well, giving him a swirly with a bathing cap on. You know, a Fruit of the Loom bathing cap. But they just stand in there and say sleazy, filthy things because they're sleazy, filthy things. A little more Moo Moo Devin.
Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, did you discuss the July 25th phone call with anyone outside the White House on July 25th or the 26th? And if so, with whom?
Yes, I did. My core function is to coordinate U.S. government policy, interagency policy, and I spoke to two individuals with regards to providing some sort of readout of the call.
Two individuals that were not in the White House?
Not in the White House, cleared U.S. government officials with appropriate need to know.
And what agencies were these officials with?
Department of State, Department of State Deputy Assistant Secretary George Kent, who is responsible for the portfolio Eastern Europe, including Ukraine, and a individual from the office of an individual in the intelligence community.
As you know, the intelligence community has 17 different agencies. What agency was this individual from?
If I could interject here, we don't want to use these proceedings.
It's our time,
I know,
Mr. Chair.
But we need to protect the whistleblower.
Please stop.
I want to make sure that there's no effort to out the whistleblower through the use of these proceedings.
That's exactly, of course, what they were trying to do. I observed earlier that I never expected to hear a member of Congress bring a John Prine song to life in a hearing as grave as this one. But there was Moo Moo Devin making real life performance art out of John Prine's Fish and Whistle.
I've been thinking lately about the people I meet, the car wash on the corner and the hole in the street, the way my ankles hurt with shoes on my feet, and I'm wondering if I'm gonna see tomorrow. Father, forgive us for what we must do. You forgive us, we'll forgive you. We'll forgive each other till we both turn blue. Then we'll whistle and go fishing in heaven.
Fish and Whistle. Yeah, of course. Because Devin Nunez went fishing for the whistleblower. Holy crap. But that's okay, because Adam Schiff was there, unflappable Adam Schiff, and all Devin Nunez could do was say, "It's our time!" Jesus, what is... I mean, Jim Shorts Jordan comes from Ohio, and we know that there are some... really Otne Ute Itbre people who could put him in office in Ohio. But this is one of those moments where my geographic ignorance of California comes shining through, and y'all have been kind enough to educate me, about just how stupid some parts of California still are. And I've got Terrace to thank for that, and Sparky, and Tracy, and a host of others. Squeaky, for one, who have explained to me that, yeah, there are still some really, really, really dumbass maggots in California. It's our time.
Protect the whistleblower. Please stop. I want to make sure that there's no effort to out the whistleblower through the use of these proceedings. If the witness has a good faith belief that this may reveal the identity of the whistleblower, that is not the purpose that we are here for, and I want to advise the witness accordingly.
Notice how he doesn't raise his voice. He doesn't suggest that Devin Nunez should be the recipient of an atomic wedgie or anything like that. I mean, the conduct of the Republicans in this hearing has been so unbecoming, not only a member of Congress, but of a member of the human race, the human species. Well, I told you I've been reading that book about dueling. And Jesus Christ, the chapter on Alexander Pushkin, oh my God. But I've been reading, and this is what ignorance looks like. Devin Nunez and Jim Shorts Jordan and that Ratcliffe guy and Elise Stefanik. They don't realize that if they were saying, if what they're saying now, they were say had, were was said in the 1840s in that body, people would be called out. And in fact, not far over into Maryland, there's a place called the Bladensburg Field. And that place ran red with blood from duelists. And it's almost enough to make you think that it would be, well, but then again, they'd cheat. You know, you show up with a pair of matched dueling pistols and the Devin Nunezes of the world would say, no, I brought me an AR-15. Because freedom. They're shameful. They're shameful and they're embarrassing. And so there it was today, and if y'all want to talk about it a little bit more later on, we certainly can. And everything that Nitwit Nero has claimed was shown to be lies in this hearing today. You know, I was just concerned about corruption. The man is a walking adipose jiggling wad of corruption in his own right. And no, he never gave any evidence of being concerned about corruption at all.
Colonel Vindman, if I could turn your attention to the April 21st call, that is the first call between President Trump and President Zelensky. Did you prepare talking points for the president to use during that call?
Yes, I did.
And did those talking points include rooting out corruption in Ukraine?
Yes.
That was something the president was supposed to raise in the conversation with President Zelensky?
Those were the recommended talking points that were cleared through the NSC staff
For the president, yes.
Did you listen in on that call?
Yes, I did.
The White House has now released the record of that call. Did President Trump ever mention corruption in the April 21st call?
To the best of my recollection, he did not.
Of course he didn't. It was a shakedown. And shakedowns, contrary to what the maggots in the Congress say, shakedowns are not okay. From our ad hoc research department, this evening being staffed by Ron and Raleigh. By the way, the Washington Generals beat the Harlem Globetrotters once, January 5th, 1971. I'm sure it was a mistake. Corruption, please. And then there's the issue of why it was that the favor Trump asked for, it was so troublesome. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman had an answer for that, too.
It sounds like President Trump was encouraging the Ukrainian president to engage in precisely the same type of behavior for President Trump's own political benefit that we discourage foreign leaders from undertaking in their own countries. And discouraging other countries from undertaking politically motivated investigation is, in fact, a major part of official U.S. anti-corruption policy. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And are you, in fact, aware of any evidence that Vice President Biden improperly interfered in investigation of his family members?
I am not.
These false narratives, it should be said, are damaging our country. They poison our politics and distract from the truth. And pressing another country to engage in corruption is antithetical to who we are as a nation. You also mentioned that you felt this request was wrong. And you've also said that corruption in Ukraine is endemic to Ukraine, just as it is in other places around the world. What is the danger of a President of the United States, whether it's Donald Trump or any future president, asking another nation where there's rampant corruption to investigate a political rival or just any other American citizen? What would be the danger to that American?
Congressman, the Ukrainian judiciary is imperfect at the moment, and the reliance on U.S. support could conceivably cause them to tip the scales of justice in favor of finding the U.S. citizen guilty if they thought they needed to do that internationally.
So they could trump up charges if they wanted to in a corrupt system like that?
They could, and Ukraine is making progress. Certainly, more broadly in Russia, that is likely to happen, where the state will be involved in judicial outcomes and drive them.
So there you have it. And if Lieutenant Colonel Vindman knew this, it's safe to say that Rudy Giuliani, who was tight with a pair of corrupt and criminal Ukrainians, you know, Lev and Igor, the Lev and Igor show, that's where they were headed. And that's the one thing that it frustrates me that the Democrats have yet to do. And I mentioned this on the previous program. Rather alliterative that, and hell on the pop filter. And that is that what was being sought was not an investigation. What was being sought was a falsehood, a willingness to lie in exchange for desperately needed money and munitions. And that is that's beyond corrupt, that's filthy. And that is exactly what Nitwit Nero wanted. And of course, the other thing that we need to bear in mind is that when these goons do whatever they can to out the whistleblower, make no mistake, they're not simply trying to expose who the whistleblower is. They are trying to get the whistleblower killed. Dead. Because if the whistleblower can be outed, then the next thing you know, well, Pootie might have some of his folks arrange an accident. There's a new book out now about the campaign of assassination as orchestrated by Pootie and his minions. And so it came as no surprise to me to read earlier that Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, who, Moo Moo Devin, is not Mr. Vindman, he's Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, he has spoken to elements in the United States Army about his own family's security. CNN reporting, the Army has had conversations with Vindman about the security of his family. The conversations were initiated at the request of the Vindmans. The Army does not believe there's an imminent security threat against Lieutenant Colonel Vindman and his family. But, well, he said, I'm grateful to my father for my father's brave act of hope 40 years ago. And for the privilege of being an American citizen and public servant, where I can live free and free of fear for mine and my family's safety. He knows how these corrupt elements behave, and he knows what they do. And one defense official speaking to CNN said that they haven't talked about moving the Vindman family yet. But if the security situation deteriorates, they will not hesitate to do so. There's courage in what he did. There's patriotism in what he did. On the other hand, an individual who knows nothing of courage or patriotism, well, he decided to slime Lieutenant Colonel Vindman. I'm talking, of course, about Butthead, Uday, Donald Trump Jr., who tweeted a link today to an article at The Federalist by some creepy maggot punk by the name of John Daniel Davidson. The headline, you know, there's no news here. It's just a sleazy hit piece, an opinion piece. The title, Let's Stop Pretending Every Impeachment Witness is a Selfless Hero. And I don't know who John Daniel Davidson is when he's at home, but based on who he publicly is, I don't much want to know. Throughout this impeachment charade, we've been told by the media and House Democrats that a cadre of unelected career bureaucrats in the State Department and the National Security Council who are cooperating with the impeachment inquiry are heroes, patriots, and paragons of virtue and self-sacrifice for defying President Trump and proclaiming the truth about Trump corruption and self-dealing in Ukraine. Last week, the media portrayed former U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch, as a courageous martyr recalled from her post by Trump for no reason and then viciously attacked by him on Twitter while she was testifying before the House Intelligence Committee. Well, you know, those are actually true things. Those are things that actually happened. It's not a portrayal. That's just reporting. And this John Daniel Davidson person, who will apparently do anything for money, went on to excoriate William Taylor, George Kent. Democrat, and then this. Democrats and the media gave special praise to Lieutenant Colonel Alex Vindman, the NSC Ukraine expert, who told impeachment investigators he was alarmed by what he heard on the July 25th phone call between Trump and President Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine. The Washington Post said the Soviet emigre escaped to America with his family as a small child and grew up determined to be as American as he can be. And then goes on to talk about Hunter Biden, of course. And then digs down and claims that Tim Morrison, in his closed-door testimony, said Vindman did not exercise appropriate judgment as to whom he would say what. But you heard what Vindman said. Barely knew the guy. This John fellow, this John Daniel Davidson is apparently political editor at The Federalist. Jesus, John Adams was a Federalist. Alexander Hamilton, who was not very much of an honorable human being in his own right, was a Federalist. But he can't even get through the whole thing without James Comey, Andrew McCabe, the sneering former FBI agent Peter Strzok. And infers that Lieutenant Colonel Vindman is, as quote, as dishonest, self-dealing, and contemptuous of the president's authority to set U.S. foreign policy in Ukraine and determine what's in the national interest. Eat a bag of dicks, John Daniel Davidson. Trump's shit does not look good on the end of your nose. And no matter how much you think it smells like daisies and violets, it doesn't. And so, Donald Trump Jr., who, of course, has never had the courage to even consider serving his country in any way, shape, form, or fashion, whose baby sister is included in a divorce agreement that says that if she ever joins the military, she gets cut off from her daddy's money. Donald Trump Jr., who scampered away from a friendly crowd in Los Angeles last week, he thinks he has the moral and intellectual heft to attack a person for having the courage to speak up in the face of manifest corruption. The only time that Donald Trump Jr. has ever carried a weapon, on the other hand, is when he was shooting at things that didn't have guns with which to shoot back. But I'd hate to create the impression that the scummy behavior was limited to the maggots who are elected members of that committee. No. Because minority counsel tried to slime him as well. And I'm talking about Stephen Castor, the pettifogger tapped by Devin Nunes to ask the counsel questions as well. It was telling that even as Daniel Castor, and we certainly have no evidence of his loyalty to the United States of America, even as he was trying to imply somehow, and you know, this is the divided loyalties is a smear used against immigrants on a fairly regular basis. I remember when there were demonstrations for DACA a few years back, and some of the people showing up carried the Mexican flag with them. And the maggots and the right, well, back then I think it was the it would have just been your average garden variety teabaggers. They had a conniption. How come they're carrying that Mexican flag in Merca? They say they want to be Americans. Well, they need to leave their Mexican flags to home. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman faced this neo-maxi zoom dweeby Stephen Castor with a smile on his face.
Picked out. When we asked the question, it sort of refreshed your recollection?
Yes, I guess that's okay. A term now.
Some discussion of, you know, whether when Mr. Morrison took over the portfolio for Dr. Hill, whether you were sidelined at all. Did you feel like you were?
So I certainly was excluded or didn't participate in the trip to Ukraine, Moldova, Belarus okay. at the end of August. And I wasn't initially, before it changed from a POTUS trip to a vice president trip to Warsaw, I wasn't participating in that one. So I didn't miss that, no.
Did you express any concerns to Mr. Morrison about why you weren't included on those trips?
So Mr. Morrison, I was on leave. I was supposed to be on leave from the 3rd of August through about the 16th or so of August. Mm-hmm. And he called me and asked me to return. There was obviously high priority travel to the region. He needed my assistance to help plan for it. And in asking me to return early from leave, which I take infrequently, I assumed that I'd be gone on the trip. So when I was, after returning from leave early, when I was told I wasn't going, I inquired about it, correct?
Okay. And what feedback did he give you?
He initially told me that the aircraft that was acquired, the Mil Air, was too small and there wasn't enough room.
Did had you ever had any discussions with Mr. Morrison about concerns that he or Dr. Hill had with your judgment?
Did I ever have any conversations with Mr. Morrison about it?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Did Mr. Morrison ever express concerns to you that he thought maybe you weren't following the chain of command in all instances?
He did not.
And did Dr. Hill or Mr. Morrison ever ask you questions about whether you were trying to access information outside of your lane?
They did not.
This is pathetic. And it's desperate. And what Castor here is trying to do is to lay a foundation, and it's not laying down very well, that somehow Lieutenant Colonel Vindman was jealous? I mean, this went on for a right smart while.
And another, you know, aspect of the Ukraine portfolio that you were not a part of were some of the communications Mr. Morrison was having with Ambassador Taylor?
Correct.
And did you ever express concern that he was leaving you off those calls?
Well, certainly it was concerning. He had just come on board. He didn't have the, he wasn't steeped in all the items that we were working on, including the policy that we had developed over the preceding months. And I thought I could contribute to that, to his, to the performance of his duties.
Okay. When you were, you went to Ukraine for the inauguration?
Correct.
At any point during that trip, did Mr. Danyluk offer you a position of defense minister with the Ukrainian government?
Ooh, smoking gun. Ooh, we've got him now, says Hamilton Berger. Not realizing he's going to lose to Perry Mason yet again.
He did.
And how many times did he do that?
I believe it was three times.
And do you have any reason why he asked you to do that?
I don't know, but every single time I dismissed it. Upon returning, I notified my chain of command and the appropriate counterintelligence folks about the offer.
I mean, Ukraine's a country that's experienced a war with Russia. Certainly their Minister of Defense is a pretty key position.
Yeah.
For the Ukrainians, President Zelensky, Mr. Danyluk to bestow.
Yeah, because Stephen Castor knows all about the ins and outs of the Ukrainian government. No, not really. More fishing and more whistling.
So that honor on you, at least asking you, I mean, that was a big honor, correct?
I think it would be a great honor, and frankly, I'm aware of service members that have left service to help nurture the developing democracies in that part of the world.
I mean, if you want to get right down to it and talk about Merkin history, there was a fellow by the name of John Paul Jones who came out of the revolution as the nearest thing we had to a naval hero, because we didn't have much in the way of a navy. We relied upon the French to counter the massive presence of His Majesty's Royal Navy. It was the French Navy who bottled up the British at Yorktown and finally brought the American Revolution to a close in our favor. But after the Revolution, having overseen the birth of the United States Navy, John Paul Jones got a call from, some czar. It was either Catherine the Great or maybe Peter. They all just run together for me. Whenever I hear about Catherine the Great, all I think about is her fascination with horses. But anyway, he took the call, so to speak, and went over and became the father not just of the American Navy, but of the Russian Navy. Because it was in American interests at the time to help the Russians get a viable naval force to further check the imperial goals of His Majesty King George III. I don't know if that's what Lieutenant Colonel Vindman was thinking about, but that's a reality.
Certainly in the Baltics, former officers, and if I recall correctly, it was an Air Force officer that became Minister of Defense. But I'm an American. I came here when I was a toddler. Ouch. And I immediately dismissed these offers, did not entertain them.
When he made this offer to you initially, did you leave the door open? Was there a reason that he had to come back and ask a second and third time, or was he just trying to convince you?
Yeah, counsel, you know what? It's the whole notion is rather comical that I was being asked to consider whether I'd want to be the Minister of Defense. I did not leave the door open at all.
Okay.
But it is pretty funny for a Lieutenant Colonel in the United States Army, which really is not that senior, to be offered that illustrious a position.
When he made this offer to you, was he speaking in English or Ukrainian?
Oh, Mr. Danieluk is a absolutely flawless English speaker. He's speaking in English.
Okay.
And just to be clear, there were two other staff officers, Embassy Kiev staff officers, that were sitting next to me when this offer was made.
Okay. Yep. And who were they?
So one of them you may have met. It was Mr. David Holmes, and the other one was, I don't know, I mean, I guess I could, it's another Foreign Service officer, Keith Bean.
Okay. Yeah, we met Mr. Holmes last Friday evening.
Yeah, and Mr. Holmes told you things that you didn't want to know, because Mr. Holmes is the one who heard the phone call that Gordon Sondland was on with Nitwit Nero, and it turns out that Nitwit Nero's one of those cranky old people who shouts into cell phones. And Gordon Sondland, the reason that David Holmes heard the call where he said, where he was asking, are they going to do the investigation? Are they going to do it? He was yelling so loud that Gordon Sondland pulled the phone back from his ear, and everybody within a 3 or 4 foot radius could hear it. Jesus God. That David Holmes.
Understand. He's a delightful fellow.
And you said when you returned.
Yeah, not going to ask any more David Holmes questions now. Yeah, that's the sound of me turning my pages here. I'm fucked. I'm so fucked. I don't know why I took this goddamn job. 3 years in fucking law school carrying briefcases for senior partners in a fucking pyramid scheme. And here I fucking sit getting my fucking ass handed to me. Find me a page with a question on it I can ask!
To the United States, you papered it up, given your you know, with SCI clearance. Whenever a foreign government makes a overture like that, you have to... You paper it up and you tell your chain of command?
I did, but I also don't know if I fully entertained it as a legitimate offer. I was just making sure that I did the right thing in terms of reporting, yes.
Okay. And did any of your supervisors, Dr. Hill at the time, or Dr. Kupperman or Ambassador Bolton ever follow up with you about that? It's rather significant. Yeah. You know, the Ukrainians offered you...
No, it's not significant.
The post of defense minister, you know, did you tell anyone in your chain of command about it?
After I spoke to, and I believe it, the deputy, our deputy senior director, John Erath, was there. I spoke, once I mentioned it to both of them, I don't believe there was ever a follow-up discussion.
Okay. So it never came up with Dr. Kupperman or Dr. Hill?
Following that conversation I had with Dr. Hill, I don't believe there was a subsequent conversation, and I don't recall ever having a conversation with Dr. Kupperman about it.
Okay, and did you brief Director Morrison when he came on board?
No, I completely forgot about it.
Okay, and subsequent to the May trip, did Mr. Danieluk ever ask you to reconsider? Were there any other offers?
No.
Okay. When he visited for the July 10th meeting in... with Ambassador Bolton, did it come up again?
It never came up again.
Okay. And did you ever think that possibly if this information was, got out, that it might create at least the perception of a conflict that the Ukrainians thought so highly of you to offer you the defense ministry post?
Mama told me to be a piano player in a whorehouse. She said it was an honorable profession to sit there and tickle the ivories in a whorehouse, but did I not listen? No, I said I wanted to be a lawyer, and now here I sit. And I'm trying to ask questions to make a guy happy who sues people over Twitter accounts about cows. Fuck me. How did it get here? I wonder if I can still play piano.
You know, on one hand, but on the other hand, you're responsible for Ukrainian policy at the National Security Council.
So, frankly, it'd be it's more important about what my American leadership, my American chain of command thinks than any of the, and this is, these are honorable people. I'm not sure if you meant it as a joke or not, but it's much more important what my civilian White House National Security Council chain of command thinks more so than anybody else. And frankly, if they were concerned about me being able to continue my duties,
of course,
they would have brought that to my attention. Dr. Hill stayed on for several more months, and we could continue to work to advance U.S. policy.
Okay. And during the times relevant of the committee's investigation, did you have any communications with Mr. Yarmak or Danny Look outside of the July 10th meeting?
I recall a courtesy note from Mr. Yarmak within days of his return to July, in which he wanted to preserve an open channel communication, and I said, please feel free to contact me with any concerns.
And were you following this? There's sort of two tracks. Ambassador Taylor walked us through it during his testimony last Wednesday. He called it a regular channel, and then he called it an irregular but not outlandish channel with Ambassador Sondland and Ambassador Volker. Were you tracking the Sondland and Volker channel during this time period?
Yeah, so I'm trying to recall at which point I became aware of Ambassador. Certainly I was aware of the fact that they were working together. Ambassador Sondland, Ambassador Volker, and Secretary Perry were working together to advance U.S. policy interests that were in support of what had been agreed to. But I didn't really learn, like I said, until the July 10th. There may have been a slightly earlier point. I recall a meeting in which Ambassador Bolton facilitated a meeting between Ambassador Volker and Ambassador Bolton in the June timeframe. And there may have been some discussion about this external.
Pathetic, isn't it? I mean, downright pitiful. Oh, and by the way, there is a disconnect with the military, and it wasn't just Moomoo Devin or Devin Moomoo, whatever it is. There's a hashtag. You know, he called him Mr. No, thank you, that's Lieutenant Colonel. It would have been fun if he'd referred to him as son, but, well, no. I happened to catch a little bit of the MSNBC coverage, and Ari Melber, who is their legal eagle, referred to Lieutenant Colonel Vindman as being enlisted. He ain't enlisted. That right there is a commissioned officer in the United States Army. And the gulf between enlisted and commissioned is broad and deep. And it's an innocent mistake, I suppose. But wow. Enlisted. Dave, reporting from the blind, says, all I have to say is, Lieutenant Colonel, good for you, sir. The Congress critter has his issues. You should have patience and restraint. When they tried to beat you because of your past, you held your head up and you answered clearly. The best thing I can say is you were truly an example. Now may others follow you. Earther with a note, let's stop pretending every witness is a hero. And let's stop pretending Bone Spurs, Sinew Vodka Udine cares about corruption. Sinew Vodka. You. Jack in Shreveport with a note. Federalist. I think the Federalist Society was indeed found to be a propaganda shill organization for the right wing and not the philosophically pure organization it purported to be. Now, Jack, I'm not sure But I think the Federalist as a website and a purveyor of sleazy white wing conspiracy theories, I think the Federalist is actually separate from the Federalist Society. I could be wrong. I'm not sure if the research department wants to take that up. I'm certainly open to it. And that's not to say that there's anything honorable about the Federalist Society. Bill Barr to prosecutions, shrieking maniac ravings to them the other day, sort of put paid to that notion. Trying to find. No. Mm-mm. But Barr declared to the Federalist Society in a recent speech that the Democrats are the ones doing the damage to the country. Yeah, really. It was an ugly little moment. And indicative of the fact that the semi-autonomous Department of Justice isn't at all. Oh, and by the way, because it's Trumptanic Tuesday, and because, as Brother Deacon Asa pointed out, earlier on, saying both streams are hot thanks to the massive dumpster fire atop the deck of the USS Trumptanic. We'll right this ship when the libs are good knowned. This really happened. This is not a joke. This is not something from The Onion. This is what makes writing for The Onion now so infernally difficult. It was a week ago that Nitwit Nero gave his speech to the Economic Club of New York. And in that speech, he defended one of his recent actions relative to India. Now, you might want to get the hockey puck for this one. This is a breathtaking moment of Trumpian stupidity. So, hence the hockey puck warning. Are we ready?
The party is thrilled with him, but if they aren't, they won't say anything. Don't worry about it. Thanks to these and other policies, last year the World Economic Forum recognized the United States as the globe's most competitive economy. We've put it back into this position where we are competitive like no other nation. To fuel our economic boom, we are boldly pursuing energy independence. And you see that in the Middle East, where ships are at great danger, and they keep saying, "What happened to the American ships?" They don't see too many American ships over there anymore. Do you notice that? We stopped the radical crusade to dismantle U.S. energy production and empower rogue regimes. We withdrew from the one-sided, horrible, horrible...
Now remember, this is 4 days before the sudden trip to Walter Reed, the sudden mysterious trip to Walter Reed.
Economically unfair. Close your businesses down within 3 years. Don't frack. Don't drill. We don't want any energy.
Hey, dumbass. Why don't you drink a glass of fracking fluid? It's so benign. Fracking's so awesome. Now just chug it right down. Yeah, you do that.
The horrible Paris Climate Accord
horrible.
That killed American jobs and shielded foreign polluters was a disaster for this country. Ask them, how are they doing in Paris with your Paris Accord? Not too good. And I will tell you, when I signed, that was another one. Clean waters of the United States, well, the Paris Accord, too. And I said, this is going to take guts. I just closed my eyes and I signed it. I got one day of a big hit from some of the radical left newspapers. And then after that, everybody.
Anybody want to help with that one? The radical left newspapers? Anybody want to tell me where I can subscribe? Because I'd kind of like to read a radical left newspaper. I'm pretty sure he's not talking about the World Socialist Workers newspaper or whatever it is. The radical left newspapers. I mean, what is that? The LA Times? New York Times? Washington Post? Atlanta Journal-Constitution? Boston Globe? Philadelphia Inquirer? Lexington Courier-Journal? Nashville Tennessean? Orlando Sentinel? Sacramento Bee? San Jose Mercury News? San Francisco Chronicle? In anything? Radical left newspapers. James Manilloy writes in, horrible, horrible. Lots and lots of Liberian ships, though. Where the hell is a Liberian? I know. But wait. He's not there yet. The hockey puck moment is still in the future.
Everybody thanks me. They thank me so profusely. You're talking about trillions and trillions of dollars of destruction would have been done to our country with the Paris Climate Accord. And it is so unfair. It doesn't kick in for China until 2030. Russia goes back into the 1990s, where the base year was the dirtiest year ever in the world. India, we are supposed to pay them money.
Wait, this is it. Here it is. Strap in. Grab, if you're sitting in a chair that has arms. Okay. Thank you, Jim. Yes, the Star Reporter, the National Enquirer, the radical left newspapers. Yes, the Weekly World News. Yes. No, this is the part where if you're in a chair that has arms, like, grab it for all you're worth. Because in a matter of mere seconds, you're going to be hooting like a goddamn barn owl.
The 1990s, where the base year was the dirtiest year ever in the world. India, we are supposed to pay them money because they're a developing nation. I said, we're a developing nation too. Why aren't we? Under the WTO, China is called a developing...
God, he's dumber than the head and the hog, isn't he, ass, isn't he? You want to hear that again? Is that a level of stupid you just... Right.
China until 2030. Russia goes back into the 1990s, where the base year was the dirtiest year ever in the world. India, we are supposed to pay them money because they're a developing nation. I said, we're a developing nation too. Why aren't we? Under the WTO, China is called a developing nation. So we wrote him a letter recently. Larry knows it. I'm not sure Larry liked the idea too much.
They say India is a developing nation. Well, we're a developing nation too. Yeah, that's right, Flavio. The Courier Journal's from Louisville. The Lexington is the Herald. Lexington is the Herald Leader. Thank you for the correction there. We regret the mistake. I don't think either one of those are radical left newspapers, though. No. And by the way, thanks to Gary and Todd from South Carolina stand for jumping in. So let's see if I can do some quick ciphering. 580. Yes. That means that Ralph's challenge has been met. And so that takes us down to 520, actually 515. So thanks to Gary and Todd. Thank you very, very much indeed. We got 515 to go to come up even here on the 19th day of November. Wait a minute. I have a feeling this is going to be good. Jack just sent this along with the subject line, Research Department. I'm eager. Let's see.
No, no, that there's a research department.
Television!
Shut up, research department!
No, we gotta save that one. Shut up, research department! When I saw that it was a Squidbillies clip, I had to go there immediately. Oh, yeah. So, India is a developing nation. We're a developing nation. Hell, I didn't even know we were still using film that had to be developed. Oh, he is... God damn, he's stupid, isn't he? I mean, we're shocking stupidness. Breathtaking stupidity. Wow. A developing nation. Glad I hung on to that one. Because the first time I heard that, I did. I barked. I admit, I just barked. Because you can't make this kind of stuff up. Not under any... No, you can't. Oh, when I mentioned the teabaggers earlier. Somebody remind me. Because I've got a teabagger reference that you might find interesting. Steve in New York says, "Yeah, it's not just they want the one whistleblower dead. They're also trying to discourage other whistleblowers from coming forward." Well, that's not working out so well because we had a story, in the last couple of days. There's a whistleblower previously alluded to in weeks past from the IRS who said that a political appointee tried to mess with the audit, the routine annual audit, both of the president and vice president. Oops. But that's not getting a lot of press right now because, the treason, the bribery. Steve says, "You know what I wish the Democrats would say? Even if everything they said about Hunter Biden were true, it would have absolutely no bearing on Trump's bribery and extortion ring." Yeah, I understand that, Steve, but I don't want to even give him no. He was trying to get a corrupt government to lie about an American citizen. Steve in New York says, "Now it all makes sense about Lieutenant Colonel Vindman. He's Jewish. Now the dual loyalty screed makes double sense. Make no mistake, this was a dog whistle to Stephen Miller and his phylum." Good use of the word phylum, Steve. Yeah, and there's more stuff out there about about Stephen Miller. He was driving the editorial direction of that website that rhymes with light and fart back before he was elevated to his status as Pee Wee Herman Goering in the Maggot administration. It never stops. It never, ever stops. They say India's a developing nation. Well, we're a developing nation. Oh, by the way, in the leaked emails that the Southern Poverty Law Center got from a former editor at Breitbart, Michael Edison Hayden over at SPLC's Hate Watch says, the emails showcase the extremist anti-immigrant ideology that undergirds the policies he has helped create as an architect of Donald Trump's presidency, including reportedly setting arrest quotas for undocumented immigrants and helping to create an executive order effectively banning immigration from five Muslim-majority countries. And this all goes back to stuff he did in 2015 and 2016. He used as his source material a white, quote, white nationalist websites, a white genocide-themed novel in which Indian men rape white women, xenophobic conspiracy theories, and eugenics-era immigration laws that Adolf Hitler lauded in Mein Kampf. The cache included more than 900 previously private emails that Miller sent to Breitbart editors from March 4th, 2015 to June 27th, 2016. It's how he got the job. Michael Edison Hayden added, Miller's perspective on race and immigration across the emails is repetitious. When discussing crime, which he does scores of times, Miller focuses on offenses committed by non-whites. On immigration, he touches solely on the perspective of severely limiting or ending non-white immigration to the United States. Hate Watch was unable to find any examples of Miller writing sympathetically or even in neutral tones about any person who is non-white or foreign-born. He is apparently a devotee of so-called replacement theory. That's the paranoid bullshit notion embraced by white supremacists that governments are trying to replace white populations with non-white populations. And recommended to the editors at Breitbart, The Camp of the Saints, a racist novel by some French writer named Jean Raspail. And neo-Nazis and white supremacists just love it. Kind of the way they love the Turner Diaries. Oh, he is a sleazy and sickening little bastard. So, plenty of work for the remainder of the program. Oh, and Moo Dev had another bad day today when he tried to ignore the rules that were agreed to by the committee and yield time to Elise Stefanik. By the way, I looked up her district. In case you're wondering what kind of mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking freaks would send her to Congress, it is a huge district. It goes all the way from the Canadian border down to a few miles north of Albany, and extends westward all the way to the St. Lawrence River and the shores of Lake Ontario. it's the kind of rural district that, what's her name, the New York senator, Kirsten Gillibrand, used to represent back when she was taking money from the NRA and bragging about how she kept two rifles under her bed so that she could defend freedom. You know, two loaded rifles in a house with little children. So if you wondered, well, wonder no more. It is almost the entirety of the Adirondack Mountains, which, by the way, just geographically speaking, is a part of the of Appalachia. Parts of Albany, Fulton, Montgomery, Rensselaer, Saratoga, Schenectady, and Schoharie counties. She was elected in 2015, and she has been busily embarrassing the United States ever since. And so, yeah, old leaky old Dev tried to yield to her again today because she's caught the eye of Nitwit Nero, and she wore her best fuchsia burlap bag to work today. And even though the rules say no, you can only, and Schiff said it again, I got 45 minutes and I can either use it or I can yield to majority counsel, and the minority will have the same 45 minutes and they can only yield to minority counsel. So Devin Nunes, of course, is dumber in the head than the hog is in the ass. And Elise Stefanik is not minority counsel, but he still tried to give her time because they're desperate to get to show that they that they're willing to let the little women's talk. And then when he got his ass handed to him again, he just slumped in his chair. It was kind of adorable. Got beat. Just sort of fell back into his chair. Oh, come on, we can do this. Get there in a minute. Now, let's try it again.
I think that's all I have, Mr. Nunes. Do you?
I have nothing more. Would the gentleman allow us to use our magic minutes to yield to one of our members who'd like to go?
The House rules don't permit that, Mr. Nunes.
We yield back.
We'll now go to five-minute member questions. I recognize myself for 5 minutes. Master Volker.
We yield back. Fuck it. Didn't work. I'm stupid. I got beat again. Yeah. So let's run over. What's that? Sacramento B asks James in Illinois. I grew up in West Sacramento, wrong side of the tracks. I could see the golden dome of the Capitol from my backyard. I think of that spurring my interest in politics. In those days, just with a whole, as with a whole lot of other towns, there were two papers. My dad read the Sacramento Union. You now know which paper went under. So many. I like newspapers. There's something satisfying about the tactile qualities of reading the news. But, okay, so we are at 515 bucks to go to finish, to come up even with the week, 515. And hopefully we'll knock some of that down in the remainder of the program. And now that we're over the halfway point, let's check in and see what Todd's got going on. Hey, Todd. Thanks, man. Yeah? Hello? Yeah, you're there.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Look, I just wanted to bounce a couple of things off of you since today seemed like such a big event to me, the testimony. First of all, let me say this. Thank you for calling out that despicable human being, the deplorable Devin Nunez, when you thought he couldn't get worse.
There's no basement with these people. No matter how awful they are, Todd, they will always find a way to be more disgusting.
I couldn't believe it. I thought he was at least going to clean up his act a little bit.
Optimist.
I mean, seriously. You know, this was the most important testimony so far. I mean, it was to the point where when Vindman and Jennifer Williams, I believe her name is, she couldn't even contain herself sometimes. She was answering his question. Like, now, yes. Like, oh, God, please ask me. I'm so fucking frightened. You know, it was just coming out. But, oh, my God, let me say this. People, ethnic folk who, well, anybody, most people who don't recognize their heritage are kind of a little fucked up in the head. And the fact that he can't even acknowledge the fact that he's Hispanic.
Portuguese, I think.
Okay. Well, good. And he, okay. His heritage is slave traders. Okay, fine. You know, that he wants to act out the part, motherfucker. He is absolutely out of control. That motherfucker is stupid and crazy. And he's got these, close-set criminal eyes. He just looks like something's wrong with him. I just don't understand that. Now, that was a joke, the close-set criminal eyes. That's Warner Brothers. But anyway, I'm glad you called him out. And I was able to watch portions. I was checking out people's body language. But, you know, when he started to bring up John Solomon, he should have been drubbed immediately.
Oh, they can't resist that. That's catnip for them.
These people are still vaulting him as if he's some type of reputable journalist. You see what happened to Corsi? Corsi got sued and fucked up in court. John Solomon's going to fuck around and go to prison. I mean, I hope he does. That's all I'm saying. But anyway, you saw that. And the other thing I wanted to ask you and kind of bounce off you. Did you notice if you saw Vindman, how do you pronounce his name?
Vindman.
All right. His body language to me was just so telling. He looked like he did not want to be there, really. And this was difficult for him. And he contemplated his answers. He is not a partisan. I did not get that impression at all. He looked like he wanted to really think about his answers.
No, I think he I think he takes seriously the requirement that the uniformed military service of this country be apolitical.
Mm-hmm. It would be nice if the president were that noble.
And, no, you know, the same thing can be said of Ms. Williams as well, Todd. I don't know what her politics are. But I have a feeling that, and it's particularly ironic when you take it in the context that Trump was out there tweeting madly away with his tiny little Adderall-addled finger thumbs on Sunday. She needs to get together with the other never-Trumpers. He thinks that anybody who doesn't he's so used to having noses put against his rectum that anybody who doesn't, he considers to be a never-Trumper. I mean, I use all these allusions to him as some sort of Caesar for a reason. He thinks that he is an absolute ruler. Remember when he said, Article 2 of the Constitution says I can do anything I want?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, I mean, you wonder how it's, I mean, you see how it's supposed to work.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer Williams gets seconded to Mike Pencilneck Geek's office.
Mm-hmm.
To keep him apprised of issues in the Baltic and you know, Ukraine, Baltic states, Ukraine, that kind of thing. Particularly Ukraine, because they are presently under attack. They're still at war. Russia is still making war on them. They have not violated the territorial integrity of Mother Russia.
No, they just want to exist as a separate country.
Right. They have been invaded.
No.
And so she gets seconded to Mike Pencilneck Geek and goes about the business of being a professional member of the diplomatic corps of the State Department. And she is on the call too. You know, that's the irony of them out there beating on their little drum about the whistleblower. The whistleblower wasn't on the call. They hammered on that. It was third-hand information. It was second-hand information. It was hearsay.
That's done now. That doesn't hold in the water.
Two people testified today who heard the fucking call.
They're on the, and they can't remember when she was notified by her attorney that, okay, you know, we don't want to talk about so much because this is classified. That was at the very beginning of the testimony. And I'm glad you brought up that term. That was the other thing, because I almost forgot. I was shocked to hear that nomenclature. Never in this type of professional setting are you a never Trumper. What the fuck, man? That is so fucking common and street and pedestrian.
Well, Todd, what happens when a never Trumper?
Stop it. Don't even fucking use that term, man.
No. What happens? What happens if is it like matter and antimatter? If an always constitutioner runs up against because that's the thing. Never Trumper is a euphemism for somebody who puts the Constitution of the United States ahead of a venal, ignorant, petty, paranoid, anxiety-ridden grifter. What Never Trumper actually means is always Constitution. Constitution above all else. Because that's the nature of the goddamn oath they take. I will defend the Constitution of the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
And domestic.
And that thing sitting in the White House is, without a doubt, a domestic enemy of the Constitution of the United States. When he says, Article 2 says I can do anything I want, that makes him a domestic enemy of the Constitution of the United States.
Yep.
Any president who says, I have powers that exceed the Constitution of the United States, has become a domestic enemy of the Constitution of the United States. And that's Trump in spades.
Every day. It's astounding. So apparently maybe we're not the only people who are shocked. I'm not trying to be funny. A lot of times we talk and I try to be funny and silly and all that. I'm not. Listen, when I heard that term, never Trumper, in an official hearing, and this is part of American history, never Trumper. It's not like you're saying wig or no, it's none of that. These people are just demeaning. They're demeaning to our country, to our process, everything. Never Trumper. What the fuck did, well, you just described it. Right. In fact, Webster should consult you for that definition. You know, that's bullshit, man. This is insane. Okay. So when you heard that, I mean, it shook you too, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess it's not surprising. But I mean, Nitwit Nero was questioning why he wore his why Lieutenant Colonel Vindman wore his uniform, because he is a commissioned officer of the United States Army. That's why. Shit for brains.
He should ask his attorney general why Oliver North wore his blues, his dress uniform.
Yeah, he didn't wear dress blues. He wore his dress greens, didn't he? Yeah, I think it was his greens.
Dress green. I don't know the right terms. Right. Right. They were green. They were Army green. I guess if you're in the Marines.
Marine green, dude. Don't get on the wrong side of the Marines.
I don't know shit about them. I mean, I know a little bit. It wasn't my thing. But, yeah, you know, and my God, you know, you want to talk about impeaching people. This criminal attorney general gives him, he's bolstering him. See, he's a goddamn problem, too. We got to get rid of him. He should be impeached. I don't know why Nancy is balking on that. It's bullshit. He's got to go.
Well, because they're hunting elephant, not piss ant.
Let me let me ask you this too. Well, first of all, I forgot to say it was so nice to hear Sandra's voice the other day.
Yeah, it was fun.
I was like, wow, I was just glad to know she was still around, you know. I remember when she was involved in when she was doing out there in Sacramento. All right. So look, when I was at work last week, there's a gentleman that came in, and I recognized him from history lectures on C-SPAN. And he wrote he had a whole lecture on the history of dueling in the United States. And I'm wondering if you wrote a book that you're reading. Does his last name begin with B?
What? I don't think I follow.
Okay. Earlier in the program, you were talking about you're reading a book about dueling.
Yeah.
Okay. So I had a historian, a professor that came into the job,
I don't have her name right off the tip of my tongue, but it's a 2004 book.
Okay. Well, this is a guy, so it probably wasn't. I don't know. It could have been his wife or friend, whoever. He was with a group of people. Okay. But it is interesting. Anyway, that history of dueling is interesting. And you're right. The way that this is, look, these folks, you know, I'm thinking Sumner, man. Come on. We're not far from that.
No. Well, we are. Realistically, we are. Nobody's going to take a swing at anybody else.
I'm not so sure about that.
No, I think it would probably get somebody bounced from the house. And they don't need to anymore because they can just go over on these maggots can just go over onto Fox and perform virtual fellatio on Nitwit Nero because it's on in his background all the time.
Mm-hmm. That's really sad. That's really sad. Well, I just wanted to, you know, see if you saw the look on Benjamin's face as he was contemplating his answers. And, you know, he came across as totally credible. Like, I'm just doing my job. This is it. I'm just doing my job. And we had more people like that would, you know, do their job in government instead of being so partisan and understanding that we are indeed experiencing a coup. You know, if this guy doesn't fit, get rid of him because he's not falling in line. He doesn't believe in unitary executive privilege. You know, you got to go. It's election. I'm just, I don't know, man. We got to get rid of this electoral college. It's that and citizens.
Well, that's another thing in these hearings that I've noted on several occasions. They're trying to take away the votes of 63 million Americans who elected Donald Trump.
The minority.
You mean the 63 million who weren't as many as the 66 million who voted for Hillary Clinton?
Some would call that simple math, yes.
I mean, Ohio just passed a I think they passed it. Maybe they just proposed it. But a law, and they're, you know, they're way behind the curve on this, because I remember when Texas did this back in the early, in the mid to late aughts. A law that says that children have to be children in school have to be graded as correct if they say Jesus. So, like, you know, you're taking your math test in fourth grade, and you're a little evangelical. You're being raised by maggots, and you're a little evangelical, and it says 2 + 2. And you write down six and seven eighths because Jesus. Well, you have to be scored as being correct because Jesus.
You making that up, man?
Nope. If let's say it's 10th grade biology, let's make it a little more interesting. And you are asked, what is the primary force that operates to provide change over time in species? And you answer...
Evolution, you mean?
Yes. But you answer Jesus, they have to score that correct.
Well, where are these people going to work? They have to live out in the woods somewhere. They can't be around us. Not educated like that. Not miseducated like that. No.
You got to live out in the woods somewhere. You know, away from the civilized folks.
I mean, seriously. No. We can't have that bullshit. Come on. No. You are serious. What the fuck is that?
Yes, I'm serious.
Oh, my God. Jesus.
Oh, hell. You're going to make me look it up, aren't you?
Look, something's got to happen. This is bullshit, man. You have to do something. I'm telling you. Look, microparticulates cannot take up all your time. Come on, that's bullshit. What the fuck? You know.
There it is. There she blows!
All right, Melville.
From hell's heart, I stab at thee. Wednesday, November 13th, 2019. Headline from, I can't tell what network they're affiliated with, but it's WKRC-TV, Local 2, or is that a 12? Local 12. By WKRC staff, headline. Ohio House passes bill allowing student answers to be scientifically wrong due to religion. Man, I'm glad we had this conversation. I'm glad you called, because this is perfect Titanic Tuesday material. The Ohio House on Wednesday last passed the Student Religious Liberties Act. Under the law, students can't be penalized because marking something wrong is penalizing little Christian students if their work is scientifically wrong, as long as the reasoning is because of their religious beliefs.
That's bullshit.
No, wait. I hope you're on a cordless phone, because you're going to be out in the yard in a minute. Instead, students are graded on substance and relevance. Every Republican in the Ohio House of Representatives voted in favor of the bill. And now it goes to the Republican Ohio State Senate.
That is fucked up. They're doing those kids a disservice, man.
It is House Bill 164.
Are you telling me that shit is about to be codified? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, baby. A bill to amend sections 3313.601, 3314.03,
3326.11 and 3328.24, Omaha, Omaha, hike! And to enact sections 3320.01, 3320.02, and 3320.03 of the revised code regarding student religious expression, and to entitle the act the Ohio Student Religious Liberties Act of 2019. Sit, Liberty, sit.
Is that Jim Jordan State?
Yep.
Motherfucker.
Let's see, part and parcel. The Board of Education of each school district may provide for a moment of silence in each school day for prayer, reflection, or meditation upon a moral, philosophical, or patriotic theme. No Board of Education, school, or employee of the school district shall require a pupil to participate in a moment of silence provided for pursuant to this section. I don't think the child's going to be able to stand, you know, sing Broadway show tunes or anything, but
well, I don't even know. I'm only halfway processing what you just said, because if that is true, that is just unbelievably disappointing. We're moving backwards at light speed. What the fuck is that bullshit? That's insane. That's just fucking insane. No. Ain't no tax dollars should be going for that. That's bullshit. That's fucking bullshit. How is that even constitutional?
Because Jesus. Jesus wrote the Constitution, what? Todd.
Man.
Yeah, however, you know, Jack in Shreveport presents the problematic aspect of this.
What?
Do the kids get to use Allah as a math tool, too?
That ain't no religion. That's a cult. See?
Yeah, right. You know. Yeah, see, that's it. Yeah. How about Krishna? Can the Buddha magically make parabolas appear without using the quadratic equation?
Wait, don't tell them higher math came from the Muslims in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, that's it. You know, they teaching that algebra, and next time they'll be teaching the Al-Qaeda.
Oh, my God, man, that's frightening. You know, it's so sad. Jesus Christ.
Well, it's like Jack in Shreveport said, subject line, religious crap. They're using this shit so that maggots and nut jobs think they don't have to obey the law. Eventually, the whole social contract fails because enough of the population just doesn't keep society working properly. Which goes back to what you said. Well, they're going to have to live out in the woods somewhere because they can't be around civilized people.
Well, that's what Ben Franklin would have said. And I trust Ben.
I mean, Jesus, I think, oddly enough, Agnes and I were talking about the Mennonites the other day.
Oh.
And these folks, you know, they're not quite as hardcore as the Amish, but they still got their beards. And, you know, there's like down in South Central Tennessee, there's an enclave of them. And you can see them on the side of the road just clip-clopping along in their little buggies.
Right.
But you know what? When they set out to make something, to carpenter up something, for instance.
Oh, they use some math skills, don't they?
They got some math skills, and they measure twice, and they use that ancient rule: measure twice before you cut once.
You're a good debater.
and you know, can you imagine an Amish or a Mennonite barn built on Ohio? Because I got a feeling that in the Mennonite communities of Ohio, Jesus is not going to substitute for pie.
Hell no! You'll get hit in the head with one of those big ass boards by you know what? Mr. Klaus. Yeah, man, there's Mennonites all over Pennsylvania, Ohio, going down your way.
Hey, pa! Why is the barn leaning? Because Jesus, son, Jesus.
They do make some stir, and look, you have to have. Come on. Now you have to have a square rule pencil, goddamn math skills to do that. They make high quality, but they're known for that.
Damn straight.
The carriages. Come on, that's the real doo-doo, man. The Quakers, too. They know how to buy shit.
That's the real doo-doo, man. Yeah, you get a cowbell for that.
You know, that came from my friend from California. She's an attorney from California. And, she will say that because she doesn't curse and she's sweet as hell. And she says, you know, that's that real shit. She won't say that's their real shit. She goes, that's their real doo-doo.
That's the real doo-doo. God,
it's great because you can say that and everybody knows what you mean, but you don't have to curse. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I just got a note from Trey saying Ohio is America's armpit.
Oh, God. But see, when I was growing up, Ohio was like, you know, union place. It was, you know, blue collar, you know, drink some good beer, music, and you know, you have your hinterlands.
Yeah, I don't want to paint with a broad brush.
But look, that is emblematic of what happened and what we have to do. Remember, they did this this GOP cult. They, you know, they're pragmatic, if nothing else, and they knew how to take over the state houses little by little. So that's what they started doing, grooming people, taking over the state houses. You know, and that's how they got what they're doing now. And that's what we have to do. And I think we're on the way. We just have to stay focused, maybe, before we, as long as we still have a country. Because this shit right now is just unbelievable. It's just really bad. The fact that we have so many people in that Washington Journal this morning, man, there's people who they don't even care. They're like, oh, it's a sham. It's a sham. This is just, you know, they're just persecuting.
Right, because that's what they've been told, and they have no critical thinking skills. I had a note from Jack earlier, and he said, Solomon, Washington Journal. At least one dumbass caller into Washington Journal cited Solomon's writings as some great treasure trove of information, of evidence of some big-ass lie conspiracy. I hadn't heard the name at the time, but soon after that, I saw a tweet, and all became clear. Jeebus effing Christ.
Yep, I heard that, and it was frightening. And he was like, oh, John Solomon's an accredited investigative journalist with a body of work that was going to shake up Washington. You wait. And they still don't understand why this administration was investigated by the FBI and our intelligence services. Early on, you know, they don't get it. It's like, well, if you're breaking the law, the law might be looking at you.
That's one of those structural problems we have, Todd, because because of our bloody past, we have rules in the House that prevent members from looking at each other and say, have you always been this stupid, or did mama drop you on your head on your way out of her? Is my good friend stupid, or is he play acting?
You can't really be coming to work that stupid. Halloween's over, motherfucker.
Wait. Yeah, no, you're on a roll this evening, Todd. You can't be coming to work that stupid. Mm-mm, no. Just no. but because we don't want them going out to Bladensburg Field in Maryland and blowing each other away, so they're not allowed to look at each other and say, "You, no, really, you are the dumbest goddamn motherfucker I have ever seen breathe in air on planet Earth," or just, you know, or maybe just get all Andy Griffith talking to Barney all frustrated like and say, "You beat all, you know that you just beat all."
He just beat all. Yo,
because I mean, that Jim Shorts Jordan going off all that bullshit. Oh, they spied on the president of the United. Oh, shut up and go and wash your wrestling leotard. Yeah, fuck off.
Leotard. Oh, shit.
Oh, they spied on this president. And my personal favorite is, and they had the Mueller investigation and it turned up nothing. Except, you know, the 10 instances of obstruction of justice.
And we allowed them to say that bullshit. That's the thing. They just repeat it. They're not critical. Like you said, and that was a key term you said. They're not critical thinkers. They think they are. Like the look on Nunez's face. He acts like he's some erudite, intelligent motherfucker, and he's sitting there looking at his notes like, you are the dumbest motherfucker I've ever fucking seen.
You're going to have to go live in the woods, Dev, because, you know.
Yeah, your shack is out there. It's waiting on you. You know, come on. Get the fuck up out. You got to go. We can't have these folks around us, man. They are contaminating our society with dumbassery. It's terrible.
And it would be nice. For instance, Peter Welch of Vermont took down Jim Shorts Jordan in epic fashion last week when he said, "Well, you know, the president's welcome to the one who started all this. The president's welcome to come here and testify."
Oh my God!
And it would be nice. For instance. If every time they say, you know, they spied on Bob Mueller found nothing, and just maybe follow up the next Democrat who gets to speak saying, is my good, honorable, right, noble, puissant friend referring to individual one, the unindicted co-conspirator in the Southern District of New York? Is that who he's talking about?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
The guy who has been credibly implicated in at least 4 federal felonies, is that who we're talking about?
Because we want to make sure we're accurate here. Right. Just tell us. This is what happens.
Wait, I've been a billable Rick has awarded me a cowbell.
Oh, good. Bitcoin.
That's for Jim Shorts Jordan needs to go wash his wrestling leotard.
That is funny, man. How often do you, first of all, you don't even hear that word anymore. Wordsmith. Leotard. We don't hear that anymore.
And you know, that was the guy's name who invented them?
No.
Yeah.
Another word.
Jacques Leotard.
Was he a ballet dancer?
I think he was a circus performer or something. And he realized that you really couldn't do much in the way of a high wire act with a pair of woolen trousers.
Well, I'm wondering, they didn't have Lycra or spandex, but I will say this: if you ever had a Merlino wool shirt, it's different.
Merino.
Yeah, right. It's very soft and flexible, thin and warm. So I'm just thinking out loud here. Now, right, because I don't know if you ever had a union suit before. Now, when I lived in upstate New York, man, you had to have with the trap door, the red flap. Oh, you got to have that, man. It gets cold. Well, look, man, I didn't want to take up too much of your time. I was just curious about if you saw Vindman's, his face. And, I mean, I don't see how you can get any more credible than that. That patriot was.
You know, but remember, we shouldn't be surprised that they attacked him. These are either the same fuckers or the children of the fuckers who showed up to the Republican National Convention in 2004 and mocked John Kerry's service by wearing a Purple Heart Band-Aid on their faces. Remember that?
Yeah, I forgot about that. They are deplorable.
Support the troops. See, look here, I got my little yellow ribbon magnet on the back of my gas guzzling Cadillac Escalade. That little yellow ribbon was made by some little child chained to a table in China. I put it right on the back of my vehicle. I support the troops.
It's right there. You can see it right there. But all right, so why do they keep saying this? And this, I'm curious about this because I don't know anyone who believes this. I hear the people, these reprobates on the other side, always saying, well, you just mad because Hillary lost. And this, I am not upset because Hillary lost. That has nothing to do with shit. I don't know anybody who is. Do you?
I'm still a little pissed off that we're letting elections be overridden by an anachronism from our slaveholding past. I mean, yeah, that upsets me a little bit, you know, the Electoral College.
Oh, yeah, that's what
you know, three-fifths of a person and all of that shit for population
and all of that purposes. Shit. And that is exactly why, I don't know, one, a couple, maybe two conversations ago, I brought up, I don't know if I was mentioned in the right year, but I think I have my notes right here somewhere. I wanted to respond to this lawmaker in my state who wrote an article about why we had to preserve the Electoral College. So, being the researcher that I am, I went to the archives. The National Archives has an excellent website.
Oh yes,
information. You know that's as far as facts go, that's probably where you want to go. And you know, it was a slow process from where you know, as you described earlier, you voted for your local folk, and they voted for you in Washington. You know, for president, you know, and the progression from that to where we are now, you know, it wasn't fits and starts. But that's why this interstate compact, I think, is important. Because this bullshit, this is, but now we have minority rule now, and it's been that way now for too long. It's not working. Yeah, I don't think it's working. I really don't. And so, you know, it's just something to think about. Well, you're doing a great job, and it's getting time to cookout season, man. It's nice and cool out.
Don't rub it in, man. We're just going into the teeth of I can't do nothing outside. I hate this.
Why not?
Because too cold.
It's been cold as shit here and rainy, you know, but it's gonna, you know.
Hey, you know what? I was gonna tell you something. Agnes had a brilliant idea, and I'm gonna try to make it happen. I don't think there's a reason not to do this, but she said, wait a minute. People use grow lights to simulate sunlight to make plants grow indoors, right? And I said, yeah.
Sure.
She said, and this time of year with the short days and everything, we're all grimmed out, you know, gray skies and shitty, and you're just kind of getting a crummy mood and you're going, oh, fuck everything.
Got the sads.
Yeah, the seasonal affective disorder syndrome.
Right.
Well, what if I was to replace all the light bulbs in the house with grow lights?
That sounds like an idea.
I mean, it ain't legal to grow no weed here, and we're not going to grow any indoor rutabagas or anything. But if it simulates sunlight, it might make us a little more perky.
Well, let me say this. You know, my father has one. There are sun lamps that have full spectrum lights.
Yeah.
And you sit in front of them. And if you are growing certain vegetatives, you know, certain plants, you can learn, you know, anyway, I learned, you know, you want to mix the blue and the red spectrum to get the full spectrum. So you could have like a cool white and a white fluorescent tube, and that will give you more of a full spectrum without buying a grow light, because they're outrageously priced. So what you want to do is mix the spectrum. Just food for thought.
I'm just thinking that might perk us up, and maybe they're might, and maybe know, and maybe they're LED now, which would be awesome.
Yeah, that oh yeah,
because they had them on sale over to the Wally World the other day.
The LEDs, listen, they have LED
grow lights.
I know. Okay, yeah, I mean they save a lot of power. LEDs have changed everything. They're wonderful. There's no heat involved. I mean, it's not no heat, but they don't.
Yeah, that's why the teabaggers were going wild a few years back. That goddamn Kenyan muslin, you slurpers, taking away our incandescent bulbs, and that's America. And that's how we know he's a Kenyan Muslim usurper, because he hates American incandescent bulbs. We got to have freedom to have incandescent light bulbs, or we ain't got no freedom at all.
So you look at your electric bill, that's how they're going.
That's how they're going to get your guns. You see, they come for your incandescent light bulbs first, and then when it's all dark, they come in and get your fucking guns.
Well, you know what that sounds like, Uncle Jack. I think his name is Reagan Bad. The little white supremacy dude out in the desert at the compound. Look, man, these things are great. Oh my God, when they go on sale, man, I get a bunch of them. I'm not, you know, I give them the next. I make sure my mom has them in her house.
In a minute, I'll get an email from somebody telling me that if we replace all our regular bulbs with grow lights, it'll make our noses and ears fall off or something.
Well, I say it's a good start. That's all I'm saying. You can't go wrong with full spectrum light, and we all understand that, most of us. I think it's a good start. That's what I say. I say yes. It won't hurt. You know, and then, right, you get you motivated, because this is, like, it gets dark in the morning, it's dark at night. You know, you want to just eat some, like, bean soup and go to sleep. You know, you start slowing down, like, all right, wake me up.
Some Kool-Aid, yeah.
Well, look, you guys have a great night, and maybe somebody else wants to talk to you. And if not, I know you must have some other stories. And that one story you mentioned, that's good for tomorrow too, but it's just Wednesday.
We've done it now, so it just goes down the memory hole. But it's worth being aware of, because when the Senate passes it, and they will, because religious freedom. And then when the governor signs it into law, we can let all the science-based industry in Ohio know that it's time to fucking leave. Because in about a generation, you'll have a bunch of little Jesus freak snowflakes who won't understand when you explain to them. And you know, we can probably shutter the Ohio State University while we're at it, because that engineering department's not going to be worth much when you get the little religious children in there who want to be given A's and say, oh, I don't know, nuclear engineering or something. When they say that radiation won't hurt them because Jesus.
Do they think this shit through? I mean, sir, did they really like just think shit through?
No, dude, there's a think tank. There are tax-exempt religious think tanks that come up with this lunatic horse shit.
I want to sit in on a meeting. I just don't understand how it even works. I just don't get it. I really don't. I mean, people worked hard to get where we are now. This is ridiculous, man. I said ridiculous. It's past ridiculous.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Oh shit! That's a cowbell, man.
Yeah, it's not. It's predonculous.
This is bad as a troglodyte. Biden's saying marijuana and cannabis is a gateway drug.
I loved Jimmy Kimmel's response. He said, "Yeah, that's the gateway drug to not getting the Democratic nomination." There, Joe.
I mean, that's the truth. The truth hurts, doesn't it? The truth is the truth, man. But you got to get out there, man. Do what you have to do with your grow light so you can get out there. And when it's nice out, enjoy your grow. And I know you're up higher elevation, but it will warm up.
We're in for 4 days of just sickening grayness.
See, this is your fucking problem, though. You're sitting looking at the goddamn weather, and you see those clouds. And you're like, oh, God, I'm going to be... You shouldn't do that.
I was a totally different person over the weekend when we had a blue sky day, and it was just beautiful. I was out walking around and stuff, and just, you know, ha-ha, lovely day. Oh, this is wonderful. You know,
you're ooh, totally
and,
lost.
Hello, birds. Hello, trees. And then, you know... And Agnes has been complaining about it, too. It's like, man, we went back into standard time, and it's just like, It's
downright. Why do we keep messing with the clock?
It's downright Shakespearean, you know, and all the clouds that lowered upon our housetops in the deep bosom of the ocean buried. Well, no, they're just still lowered on our housetops. Yeah, meanwhile, Agnes is in the bedroom bleating like a goat. Meh, to you too, dear.
Oh, God. That's too funny. Hey, this book, when I get up in the morning, man, it'll be up. I'm up. And it's going to be dark, cold, damp. It's fucking colder here than it is in Philadelphia, man. I hate that shit. I'm not kidding.
Well, I just, I'm trying to think, I'm visualizing. You know, it's like Zen in the Art of Archery. You have to visualize the arrow flying toward the target. And I'm trying to visualize me as a happier, healthier person. And that guy gets up and goes for a 2-mile walk every morning, and he does some exercising, and he's eating right and quitting smoking and shit. And I wake up, and then I look outside, and I go, fuck. I gotta get past that, Todd. I gotta get past that.
You look out, and you see a dark gray sky. Like, what's the point? I'm going, you know,
meanwhile, Tracy's taking her morning walk, and she sends me a picture of the horizon, you know, with the rosy-fingered dawn and all of that shit, you know, out there in Encino, and she's like, I'm off for my walk. I'm like, well, yeah, it's because there's not fucking clouds lowered on your housetop.
Tracy's no joke, man. I'm on her. She's going to be a motivational speaker. I'm grooming her for that. I'm really.
I know. You're not giving up.
I'm not. She thinks I'm kidding, man. Every time I talk to her, I'm like, no, I'm serious, Tracy. You have a real story here. You know, you got to do this. There's a lot of people who struggle with weight and exercise stuff, and she's just doing it.
Yeah. Decided to fuck it. Not gonna let it get me. I'm gonna overcome it, and did it, and is still doing it. And meanwhile, I've been straightened out by Jack in Shreveport. Gray, dude, Shreveport gets 52 inches of rain average per year, and the only in the body of the message, just one word: fuck, fuck, fuck,
fuck, damn,
fuck,
fuck. Wow. Well. That sounds like a swamp, if you ask me. 52 minutes. Yeah, I don't know. But, well, with the smoking thing, all I can say is that motivation, like I said before, man, keep your motivation up. Even if you're engaging in the activity, in the back of your head, every time you hold that cigarette, you look at it and go, you know, I'm quitting you soon. I'm going to enjoy this one, but I'm quitting you soon. And finally, it will happen. And when you get down to 3 a day, you're done. I mean, it's up to you then. It's like, do you really want to do it or not? I can't speak for everybody's different. But I'm just saying that, when you get down to 3 a day, you know, for me, I wrote down the most satisfying cigarettes, and I got down to 3, like when I'm drinking. After a big spicy meal and after sex. And then when you get down, you know, when you whittle those down, you know, and just contemplate every cigarette. That's something you can do now. Just contemplate it.
I got scared because my blood pressure was misbehaving. So I got some new medicine last week or a week before last, and it seems to be working. And I put I got a blood pressure cuff, and today I took my blood pressure right before airtime, and and it's one of those automatic things, and it'll connect with your phone via Bluetooth, and you know, so you've got a nice little
grab. Oh, man, nice.
And so this evening, right before airtime, I took it, and it'll qualify it'll quantify as go the fuck to the hospital, you're about to have a stroke. Or hypertension level 2, or hypertension level 1, or elevated, or the most glorious setting of all, normal. And a little bit before airtime this evening, I got my first normal.
Beautiful.
It was awesome.
That's good news, Bob. That's excellent news.
So
now, what is it? Do you have the cuff on now?
No. That would be the end of the program if I did that. He's like, whoa, Jesus!
Yeah. Bluetooth will blow up there.
Warning! As to grow lights, James in Illinois says, "You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, Mr. Kincaid, and I won't have it. Is that clear?"
Hey, man, people have to do it.
Before you go, I got to share one thing with you because you're going to be running in the yard. If the Ohio story didn't do it, this will. So lately, all the news out of Iowa is that scrappy young Pete Buttigieg has surged to the forefront in Iowa because Iowa Democrats don't realize that there is not a rat's chance in hell that America will ever elect a gay man, at least for the next 10, 15, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that, and it's not so much on the Democratic side, it's that that will be a motivator for the evangelicals, and they will fundraise on his gay back and get gajillions of tax-free dollars out there and pump them into filthy attack ads talking about what a fucking sodomite he is. And
oh, preachers, my God.
And preachers in the pulpits will be shrieking at the top of their lungs, America will die if we elect a homosexual. I mean, I had the audio 2-3 weeks ago from that dickhead in Sevier County, Tennessee, okay? Sevierville.
I believe that. I believe that scenario. I believe that. Yep.
But, you know, try telling that to people in Indiana. And, you know, I think I've got a long enough history with this program to show that that's not a problem I got.
Mm-hmm. No, that right. See, people need to understand when folks make I won't say prediction, but they make an observation doesn't necessarily mean that's your opinion. This is just how you see things playing out.
Yeah, I mean,
it has nothing to do with maybe.
Right. And so that brings along the president of the Philippines, Brother Deacon Asa, turned me.
Oh, Duterte.
Story. Yeah, Duterte.
Yeah.
He's been sliming his political opponent, and someone who's out there pointing out what an asshole he is, a Philippine senator named Antonio Trillanes IV.
Mm-hmm.
And along the way, he accused the senator of being gay. And then, by way of explaining himself, he said, "Well, I too was a bit gay while I was married to my ex-wife, Elizabeth Zimmerman."
What?
No, really. Their marriage was annulled back in the year 2000.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm not making this up. I don't make this shit up.
Wait till Trump hears that shit.
Yeah, he said. But he said I was a bit gay, but I was cured when I met my current wife, my current partner, Honeylet Avencena.
So he's bi curious. All right. So he's bi.
No. This is beautiful. Here's the poll quote. "I became a man again, so beautiful women cured me."
Oh, again? Oh, he's trolling himself. Oh, shit.
"I hated handsome men afterwards. I now prefer beautiful women."
Wait, you did your smarmy.
Stay thirsty, my friends. I mean, stay thirsty in the modern parlance of thirsty. I think maybe that's why Dos Equis dropped that advertising slogan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was funny. I remember that commercial. Yep, I remember that one. Oh, Bob, that's hilarious,
He's the most formerly gay man in the world. He is Rodrigo Duterte. I used to be a little bit gay myself.
that's too damn funny. He's
meanwhile, the gay contingent of the Horn Family Community Congregation is going, God damn it! So, yes, Rodrigo Duterte used to be a little bit gay.
A little bit. Just a little bit, you know, on Saturday nights.
I'm sorry, I just envision him. I envision him as the cat from the Shrek movies, you know, as voiced by Antonio Banderas. Arthur says, I was a bit gay once, but now I'm straight and fabulous.
I envision him as the fat guy from, well, I shouldn't say it like that, as the...
Puss in Boots, that's who I'm thinking of.
All right.
I was about to say Cheshire Cat, but no, it's Antonio Banderas' voices. Puss in Boots. Yeah.
What do you remember? That, do you remember Sopranos when one of the guys, you know, he was a big guy, you know, physically like rotund, and it turns out he was gay, and they called him at the gay bar, at S&M gay bar, and like leather and stuff. I forget his name and his character.
Oh, Jesus,
name.
Yeah. But, well, so let me yeah. So having done all that setup,
right.
You know, scrappy young South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg has surged to the front of the polls in Iowa because Iowa voters don't understand America, and they certainly don't understand what motivates maggots.
He's not going to win the South. I mean, that's not going to happen.
Well, you know, he did some pretty slimy business. You might have even heard about it in South Carolina with his Frederick Douglass plan.
Mm-hmm.
He put out a list of black community leaders who had endorsed his plan without their consent. And the next thing you know, you got a bunch of people saying, "Uh-uh, no, I didn't. I got to live here."
That's insulting as fuck, man. I mean, come on. Don't even vote Frederick Douglass's name and then don't even talk. You know, this. Anyway, go ahead. See, that's the wrong approach.
So it turns out, I mean, he's scrappy and young, but he's been wanting to be a political person for a long time. So way, 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 way back in 2010, he ran for state.
That ain't that long ago.
State treasurer of Tallahassee, and they had a meet the candidates night. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you recall your 2010, that's during the frothing, foaming at the mouth, urine-colored snake flag waving zenith of the teabagger movement.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, the teabagger movement that we later found out was just a rebranded version of the Klan and the John Birch Society and the American Nazi Party and all of those assholes. And so Pete Buttigieg, eager, young, scrappy Pete Buttigieg, who wanted to be state treasurer of Tallahassee at that point in time, went to a meet the candidates forum hosted by Citizens for Common Sense, which just happened to be affiliated with the teabaggers. And Pete Buttigieg felt like, well, you know, he was going to need everybody to vote for him so he could be treasurer of the state of Tallahassee. And he said this. Okay, so that's Richard Murdoch, and we're going to skip a bit, brother.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still talking, and we're going to, I had it queued up, but then everything crashed, and so now I got to queue it up again. Ah, there's Pete Buttigieg. Okay, Richard Murdoch will finish, and then here'll come Pete.
Thanks, first of all, for having me here. I have to admit, as a Democrat, that many of my friends and supporters looked at me as if I was absolutely nuts when I suggested that I would be coming tonight to speak with a group that's often identified with the Tea Party. There are some, especially in my party, who think that the Tea Party is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican Party.
You got that, Todd? There are some in my party who think that the Tea Party is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican Party. You know what those people in his party who thought that the Tea Party was a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican Party, you know what they were?
What?
Right. They were right.
That was the new Republican Party.
Yeah. So it's a little thin and tinny. I hope people can hear it, but let's go back.
Thanks, first of all, for having me here. I have to admit, as a Democrat, that many of my friends and supporters looked at me as if I was absolutely nuts when I suggested that I would be coming tonight to speak with a group that's often identified with the Tea Party. There are some, especially in my party, who think that the Tea Party is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican Party. But there are many others who believe that the Tea Party is motivated by real concerns about the direction of our government. And
really, 2010, that one is in our White House, and Pete Buttigieg is standing up somewhere in Tallahassee, saying, but there are others who think that the Tea Party is motivated by concerns about the direction of our government. Do you happen to remember what was going on in 2010, Todd?
I do.
I seem to recall that the direction the government was going in that was so worrisome to the Tea Party was the idea that people would be able to go to the doctor when they're fucking sick.
It was like, oh my God, they voted for that guy. He's in there. He is, despite our efforts to thwart everything he does, he's still passing. He's, you know, passing things, executive order, and doing what he can, and moving this stuff forward. They were frightened. Hey, Bob, I'm so glad you brought that up. I wake up in the morning sometimes thinking about this. We are all this bullshit we're having to deal with right now. These hearings, this espionage, the Russian assets all over the place. I think a lot of that is just because we had that black guy in there for 8 years, and it just incensed the whole.
Well, right, and this is like September 28th of 2010. So this is just shortly after Al Franken finally got seated in the Senate, and we had a 67-vote mm-hmm. majority in the Senate. And mm-hmm. in a matter of weeks, the entire economy would melt like a wax cat in a candle factory. Mm-hmm. And they would begin having conniptions and screaming communism about working class people being able to go to the doctor and afford insurance and not just dying on the floor.
I really wish you hadn't brought that up. I mean, I've been thinking about the numbers.
That's the direction this country is going in that Pete Buttigieg cites favorably about the Tea Party. It doesn't go on much longer. Let's just get the rest of it.
I know, I'm sorry. Yeah.
And above all, the frustration with business as usual. That is what motivated me to run. And so while we may come from often very different perspectives, I believe we might find that we have a lot in common on that front. I grew up right here in South Bend. We're less than a mile from my home, which in turn is around the corner from where I grew up. And growing up in South Bend, as many of you know, means you grow up with a very intuitive sense of the importance of jobs. Because here we grew up in the shadow of that big Studebaker plant, right south of Kovaleski Stadium. A facility that has stood empty for my entire life. And in many ways, to this day, South Bend has not yet recovered from the blow that we got when that company closed its doors. We haven't recovered the same population, and I would argue we haven't, in many ways, recovered the same economic vibrancy as a whole. And so before I can even pronounce the word economics and employment and industry meant a great deal to me. That's why I went to, somebody made a mistake and gave me a Rhodes Scholarship, and I used it to go overseas and learn economics. And I did that because I wanted to understand unemployment at the theoretical level. And then I came back and went into business, and I worked for a company where my job was to do math. I'm a car card-carrying nerd. You sort of have to be to make the state treasurer's an important office and an exciting one. And I did math for a living around economics, the economics of energy and the economics of stabilizing very tough places around the world in order to make sure there's less violence there. But I got to thinking, if I'm any good at stabilizing economies, maybe I would try to help stabilize the economy right here in Indiana. And so the premise of my campaign is that the state treasurer's office could be doing more to help our economic life. And I've laid out a series of specific ideas, not only first to make our money safer, which is, I think, agenda item number one no matter what, but also that we can be part of the solution out of that treasurer's office when it comes to the jobs crisis. When I travel around the state, the number one, two, and three issues I hear about are jobs, jobs, and jobs. And I believe that we can mobilize the $7 to $8 billion managed by the treasurer's office on any given day in a more effective, more creative way. So I'm obviously new, I'm obviously young, I obviously do not represent the status quo or an old way of doing business, but I hope that I'll be given a chance because I really believe in this stuff. I really think it matters, maybe just because I am here. And I'm here for the other party to reach out in good faith and look forward to our conversation. Thank you.
Now, I don't know if this is before he came out, but there was nothing in there that, no, I don't know. Jack in Shreveport says, "Oh God, he's into that economics BS. Please don't let me hear him say the dignity of work." James in Illinois says, "Teabaggers, keep your government hands off my Medicare." But the bottom line is that the Tea Party was a bunch of fucking racists. Plain and simple.
Yeah.
And so there he is in 2010, shinnying up against him and trying to convince him that, you know, he's their guy. And that they're not really all a bunch of Republicans, which they were. And remember, nobody drove birtherism harder than the teabaggers. Birtherism that is routinely understood now to have been the rankest form of racism.
Well, that was, you know, you had to expect that.
How you expect that's going to play since you're in South Carolina and since for some reason or another we care what South Carolina thinks about Democratic nominees, even though South Carolina is never, ever, 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 goddamn ever going to give its electoral college votes to a Democrat. How's that going to play in South Carolina, cuddling up against a bunch of fucking racists?
Oh, that's just going to make him more of an outlier than he already is, because maybe a lot of the folks don't understand that this is a conservative state, no matter what your ethnicity. That the Hispanics, the white folks, most of the black folks, people here are conservative. And just by, by nature, I'm just saying, you have pockets. You have Charleston, you have parts of Columbia, but that's not most of the state. And, you know, and that's not where the votes are. Once again, it's how things are district, you know, the way the districts are set up. Just like where I vote, man, it's blue blood to vote where I vote. And, you know, so my vote means nothing. I mean, I got people who don't even, you know, all they do, their job is to look at their portfolio like twice a week. That's their job. And the rest of the time they do whatever, they have executive time. You know, so they vote where I vote. So my vote ain't shit. But, he's like a political chameleon, maybe like Bloomberg. That's damning. I don't know. All I can say is it's kind of damning. What do you think?
Well, yeah, no, that's exactly. It is like Michael Bloomberg, who said for the longest time that stop and frisk was a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it was empirically proven, data-driven, that it was uniformly misused against people of color far more than it was ever than white folks were ever stopped and frisked. Now he says maybe it was a mistake. Now
he sees all over the place. You know, and you know he's low key. But you see, this is feeding into the problem that started with the DNC at the before the cycle, and the setup is in, the fix is in, and the people who are supposed to be our people are not our people. They are incompetent. The DNC is incompetent. Why would you all this shit that we're dealing with, a lot of this shit we're dealing with on the DNC side, please try to hear me out. I'm going to slow down because it just gets me irritated. Okay. They should have figured out six people, fully vetted, behind closed doors. You don't have 6.3 million people running for the nomination. Not when we're faced with a crisis here. We've been in constitutional crisis for 2.6 years, at least. You don't come in all diffused and weak and looking stupid and changing rules and say, okay, well, you have to do this to get in this debate. And we have, you know, 14 people on stage. And it's not even a debate. It's just, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's not effective. If you're serious about this, we're in crisis. It's bullshit.
Yeah, we are. And I have to add the usual caveat after that mild critique of Pete Buttigieg. If he is the nominee of the Democrats, I will vote for him.
We, of course.
And having experienced 8 years of the Obama presidency and having heard I hope this doesn't come across wrong because I've had conversations offline with Tracy about that word. And it is physically painful to me to hear it. I can't stand it. It sickens me, that word that's got all the same letters as gingers. I hate it. And
I don't get upset over words.
I do. That word in particular. So for 8 years, every time I walked into, it seemed like, the Shell station, and I don't even go there anymore because I got so sick of it. Every time I walked into the Shell station, Rippy Mart down the road, there were a couple of old racist coots down there.
Coots?
Yeah. And that word was tumbling off of their distended their snuff distended lips, like water flowing over a rock into a pool. It was Obama Obama and goddamn Obama,
right?
Okay, and it was 8 years of it.
Yep.
And there was no talking to him.
Well, because it's an offense.
You know, I looked at one of them one time and I said, you know, is that the only word you've got? And he goes, you must be one of them fucking liberals that loves them. Beep. I said, that's what Jesus said to do. Because, you know, you can always hit him right in the Jesus in those moments. And so I'm going to vote for Pete Buttigieg if Pete Buttigieg is my party's nominee.
No, we are okay. Listen, collectively, we are not going to flunk that IQ test again, please.
But here's the thing. I know that going forward, if he's my nominee, I'm going to have to spend my time arguing with goddamn maggots here who are going to feel rejuvenated and reinvigorated to use another filthy ass epithet to describe him.
Oh, wow. You're right.
And it's that word that the British use as a slang for cigarette.
Yup. You know what? I never thought about that. You're right. That's common.
It's going to be all over the... And if I find it offensive, how tormentingly painful is it to our, you know, to our friends in the gay community?
Well, these people are violent, though. That's the problem, right? Yep, you have a point.
And it'll that filthy torrent will flow out of every fucking church around here.
Well, you know what's interesting? When you look at these rallies, I mean, the fact that a lot of people just can't say, yeah, it kind of has that feel of a certain type of gathering.
But the downside of it, Todd, is that there is something about every one of them, every one of these candidates, that will be used. It'll be Pocahontas or communist for Elizabeth Warren.
They have to do that.
It'll be right. Communist Jew boy for Bernie.
But see, we're going to be all bloodied up. We're diffuse. We're going to be bloodied up. I don't have a good feeling. And we have not addressed the security of our voting yet because we're involved in all this other nonsense. And people are not connecting dots. I don't understand why people aren't seeing what's really going on. And you know, Florida, we should be demanding what county in Florida had actual votes flipped.
Yeah.
And there's a seal on it. Because you don't hear, just because they're not talking about it doesn't mean you shouldn't talk about it. If you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But they put a seal on that. That is, what the hell, man? We don't know what county. It could be Brevard County. You know, that's a big deal. And if they did it there, where else are they doing it? They're, you know, come on. But for instance, okay, I know you're going to go. Maybe somebody's calling. But we have to pay attention to what's not being talked about sometimes.
I know. Well, it's been a lovely. It's been a fantastic conversation, Todd. I appreciate you making the call.
Hey, talk to you later.
All right, man. Hang in there.
All right,
later.
Bye now.
Our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan. And again, I mean, you know what they'll say about Julian Castro. You know what they'll say about Kamala Harris. You know what they'll say about Cory Booker. And you know, and part of the reason for the Ukraine smear was to have something to say about Joe Biden. And so this business that we're going through now is effectively the same thing as Benghazi relative to Hillary Clinton. They will call all of our candidates one thing or another, and I acknowledge that. And we just have to struggle through it. But I just got a note from Lady B, and by the way, we're about 9 minutes away from the end of the program, and we're at 5:15, so that's where that stands. Lady B says, I hope I don't offend many of my gay friends and the community, but Pete is the reason why many blacks feel comparing being gay to being black is disingenuous. This trying to reach across the aisle shit is weird to me. Obama did it because he had to. Pete Buttigieg does it because A, he wants to be president and he will do whatever it takes, and B, because he can. Sure, there are folks who absolutely will not vote for him, and God forbid anyone tries to hurt him. But does he really believe that by trying to appeal to centrist middle America, he will somehow win the nomination? And I'll add editorially to that, to what Lady B has said, that centrist middle America, those noble white people of the heartland, that's the maggots. And they're not going to leave the real deal for somebody who's wishy-washy, even if he talks sweetly about them. But, you know, Lady B says, does he really believe that by trying to appeal to centrist middle America, he'll somehow win the nomination? God, that is ballsy. I guess I wish him luck. But maybe that speaks to the power of having white skin. They hated a black Harvard constitutional professor, but they'll embrace him? Dare to dream, I guess. If he's the nominee, he's got my vote. He's not stupid, and it ain't my business who he sleeps with, but he's nowhere near ready. I'm pushing for Warren. We should at least entertain a professor and scholar of the law, even if she is a woman. I think there was a little tongue-in-cheek there. I haven't endorsed any candidate. I prefer a more progressive candidate. But Jesus Christ. We got a hard row to hoe, and we better damned well acknowledge it. And as badly as the Constitution needs to be supported and upheld through these impeachment hearings, it is inescapable that Biden, 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 Ukraine, 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 is driving a certain theme home. I mean, they televised all the Benghazi hearings. We knew it was bullshit. But there are still people out there saying, oh, I can't stand that Hillary because of fucking Benghazi. So we at least need to be cognizant of it. Hey, haven't heard from Will in a while. And that's Will from the greater Chicagoland area. Hey, Will.
Greetings. I am calling to you after spending 3 hours marching in the cold around the Indiana State House among 15,000 who attended the Red for Ed event to call for better funding education, better treatment for teachers, and less high-stakes testing. I was not among the 5,000 who went to the state capitol as I lost my group and figured, you know, I'll keep marching. I'm cold-resistant. Thanks to a quirk of genetics, but it was tiring and not grating. But
I'm awful glad you went, though. I really am.
It was important. Here are some of the signs from the North Newton Township district, which is south of me and still in the very edge of the greater Chicago area. Schools closed today due to poor leaders. Please support education. My sign was meant to be humorous, and no offense to your state, native state, or the state, which is the same state where my friend Daryl Daniels, formerly of democracyinteractive.com, lives. It was Indiana or Indiana. Choose which one. And a lot of people like that because of the irony, because for some in the GOP, I think they would just like to turn everything where Alabama and Mississippi are. We're already last in the nation in teacher pay raises. Governor Holcomb, who found time to go to Florida but not to attend Organization Day at the state capitol, found $50 million for a pig barn at the state fairgrounds, but not money for teacher raises. And I am
at
about $50,000 a year, which is, and I could get more just by crossing the border to Illinois or by going to other states entirely like Massachusetts or California. And we're losing teachers. We have a lot of about one third of Indiana teachers have to work other jobs. At my school, there are people who work as waitresses or in some of the casinos. So I'm glad I went. I also chatted with a lot of people. I did not have a red hat, so I brought a red kippah, and a woman asked if I was a rabbi. I should have brought mine down, but he's also working as a chaplain in an ER, as a training program. But it was important to be out there, and they also had, at the same time, a rally on redistricting issues, because he who makes the districts determines the voters. So we have to have the courage to take a stand and get out there, and people are fed up. And how does it begin? With something small, as I understand it. Just began with a few people in Kokomo saying we have to do something, and turned out to be over half of the state school district. So there's hope in the Midwest, even though I think Buttigieg may only find votes in Indiana from the larger communities, the college towns, Northwest Indiana, his native South Bend, Fort Wayne, Bloomington, and Indianapolis. On the international front, there will be a deadline. Unless talks succeed, Israel may be going to a third round of elections, because Netanyahu is trying to push for a unity government, and Benny Gantz says no. The parties my slate won, and Netanyahu is having a fit because Gantz's parties were endorsed by the Arab parties as well, which Gantz is willing to treat more fairly. So in the next day or two, we may have round words of a third round of elections. So in the long run, I think people can make a change, and we have to remember, as bad as it seems, We have been through worse. As I reflect this week, I remember a World War II veteran I helped out in my community, and he had seen far worse times than I. So let us remember, we have the power to change things. There's an old Talmudic tale of a man who is planting a tree, and his neighbor runs to him and says, "Come, come, the Messiah is here." And the man calmly plants his tree, cleans his hands of the dust, and says, "Come, let us meet this Messiah." We must be the ones who do the work. And if a great person comes along the way, great. Until then, we got work to do.
It's a matter of priorities, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, it's up to us to be the people who need to make the change.
Messiah will not hold it against me for finishing planting this tree, because this tree is going to be a blessing for generations.
Exactly. And to be blunt, we have to realize we must be the ones to act. I mean, too often I think we wait for a leader. That is not the model for a democracy. The model for a democracy is people standing up. So I have hope, even if the times seem dark at times, even if we have a GOP who I'm in many cases... Well, not all, but I must question, is their oath to the Constitution or to a man? If they is to a man, then I would argue they should at least have the honor to admit so publicly so they can be voted out. But let's have courage and hope and do the hard work, as you and people involved at Cold River Mountain and other good organizations in Appalachia and beyond, too, because it's up to us. Because if we just sit back and grumble, nothing happens. But 15,000 people were willing to walk in temperatures of between 40 and 50 degrees with light rain, and they were even use humor. My son was humorous. There was one which will give everyone a laugh, and I think I'll end with that. This woman had a sign which said, "My bra supports me more than you do."
Ooh.
Yes, and I.
From a practical standpoint, since we were talking about being practical a moment ago, what are the chances that a wild-eyed, rabid, maggot Republican legislature like you have in Talibandiana is going to listen?
Not much, but I view it as a step, because there's elections down the road. Sometimes we have to take the long view. Consider 100 years ago. The NAACP had such luminaries as, Du Bois?
W.E.B. Du Bois.
W.B. Du Bois, sorry, I always mangle that, Jane Addams and others, who knew they were in it for the long haul. They all realized they weren't going to see Voting Rights Act in their lifetime unless they lived to be very old. And yet, their efforts led to others, which ultimately led to, in 1964, the Voting Rights Act. So we have to take a long view. Sometimes we have to think in not terms of months or years, but sometimes decades. And this is something that we can learn from our elders, that sometimes, as hard as the odds seem, we need to get the message out, we need to act. And I'm also going to briefly do my commercial plug for the horn. And one way you can act is by supporting conversations such as that of the horn. Sorry, you knew that was coming, Bob.
I sincerely appreciate it. You make it count.
And I'll try to do what I can soon. I should check my bank account, as some things are due. But consider this. It is not completely hopeless.
No.
When I think of my lifetime, here are things that I've seen that if you would have said 25 years ago we would not see. The right of people to marry the rational adult of their choosing. An African-American precedent. If we go 30 years back, the fall of the Berlin Wall, my dad at one point thought it would all end probably in nuclear fire, and yet we are still here. So one thing we have to remember is act for the short term, have short-term goals, mid-term goals, and long-term goals, and you can keep all those plates spinning at the same time. And we who have to be the ones who herald the future, because to quote Hillel, if not us, who? If not now, when?
Brilliant man, that Hillel. And yes. I'm not being a smartass. It really was.
Oh yeah, I mean here's the thing. He would be definitely in my top 10 for a dinner invite from history, simply because he always, in rendering his judgments, remembered the humanity of others and avoided fanaticism. There's lots of wisdom out there.
That particular Hillel quote. Kurt Vonnegut and Mark Twain are on my Dinner with the Immortals list.
Those would be. I'd have to squeeze all of them in.
I can see Hillel saying, "If not us, who? If not now, when?" And having Kurt Vonnegut look at him and say, "If this isn't nice, what is?"
Yep. Well, I mean, there's a lot of wisdom out there, and we must find it and have the courage to act on it. Because it's one thing to have platitudes, it's one thing to have convictions, but compassion is courage and love in action. And let us show compassion towards all. And get out there and do something. If I can walk around for 3 hours with a red kippah on, and since go red, I had to zip my coat up at some point in those 3 hours. Guess what? And hold a sign. There's a lot more we can do. Even if all you can do is a few phone calls or a chip into the horn or another worthy cause, it's up to you, because if it's in the end up to us. We have more power than we realize, and this is the nature of dictatorships, to deny that there is any power but the power in charge. So let us give them a big screw you and say, we are going to act, we will not be silent, and we will have the courage to act on our convictions. And then let us watch the world change, because that's how it happens, one person at a time. Margaret Mead.
You know what? You never cease to inspire me with your relentless optimism, Will, and that's no joke.
It's a choice. I could choose to despair. I could choose a look at any number of facts that would argue I should just enjoy life because as a species we are screwed. And yet, we have come back from dark times before.
And you know what? On that front, we should probably wrap the program up with a little bit of good news.
Yes.
Something good happened in California today. Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, has announced a moratorium on fracking in California. Because remember, Jerry Brown, for all of his other bona fides, Jerry Brown was a fracking fan. Well, Gavin Newsom says, no, we're not going to do any more fracking in California. And we're going, it's temporary, supposedly. But he says it's not going to happen until somehow we mitigate the monstrous effects on public health that the oil industry, the gas industry, all of it has had on the people of that state.
And it's a start. and perhaps it'll inspire others. And also, California is not going to buy cars from those automakers that sided with the president on the emissions issue. So that will hit them where it counts, in their wallet.
Here's hoping it hits hard.
Amen to that. Hang in there and remember, have hope, work hard, and it's up to us.
Will be well. Thank you kindly.
Thank you.
Have a great evening.
All right. Good night.
Bye now. That's our buddy Will calling from somewhere near the greater Chicagoland area. He put his feet where he put his feet on the street and marched today for the sake of the children who are the charges of educators in a brutally right-wing state. Thank you, Will. Thank you. And thanks very kindly to Todd and to Gary, and thank you kindly to Ralphs for jumping in this evening. Thanks to our subscribers. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever fashion you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks, Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.